I watched the TV as a kid, and they'd take an ordinary object, which was quite recognisable, but they'd just keep it still, and you look at it from one end, and they'd ask you, what is this? But they wouldn't let you know what it was until the next week. And what it was the perception when you don't see it this way, that way, this way, that way, when you don't move around to explore it, you only have one angle, it's very difficult to understand what it is. And that was the best simile which I could give to a jhanas. What you have there is very powerful awareness, but you can't move your mind this way and that way, or the object this way and that way. Everything is really still, which means you can't understand what it is. Jhanas are where you gather the data. You gather the data because these are strong experiences and that you are very, very aware. The simile which I gave is like you have an accident or a trauma where your body forces you to be hyper aware because it's a matter of life and death. Here, you're hyper aware, you can't forget what's happening because the mindfulness is incredibly strong, but it's entirely pleasant. So what one does is when one emerges after the jhana, when one emerges, the five hindrances are still out for a long period of time, that you have a great deal of courage, awareness, your desires, ill will, restlessness, all of that is all just suppressed for a long time. Actually, it's gone for a long time. And that gives you the opportunity to be able to see what's happened. And it's even, you don't need to actually to put forth any resolution that I am going to just explore those jhanas which were just in my mind. I can recollect them so easily. It just happens. You've just been through an incredible experience, leaving a very strong impression on your mind, and you just say, what the heck was that? And of course, if you have some teachings, some good teachings, then you'll be able to look at those experiences and not just find out what was there, but find out what was missing, what had disappeared, what had gone. And that's where, like the simile of the tadpole and the frog, that is where you can understand what these things are. So, it's the mind sort of is the only thing left when you first enter the jhanas, it's the citta, but then the will, the controller, in the first jhana is just almost got its little automatic, a little wobble left, but in the second jhana above there is no will at all. That's something which is missing. You can't decide to contemplate that because there's nothing to do with the decision making. It's gone. And when you come out afterwards, wow, that was amazing. What was there? What had disappeared? And that's the major thing from the second jhana onwards. It's samadhi cha piti sukha, the bliss born of absolute stillness. Why still? Because the mind can't move. But the knower, what is the knower? The mindfulness is there, but even the mindfulness can't move. But that's what happens when you get to the fourth jhana. It's in this little book over there, The Mindfulness Bliss and Beyond. In the fourth jhana, the mind is very still. And the piti sukha, the joy, the happiness, that is disappeared, but and more refined happiness comes in. So there's always happiness everywhere you go, but it's more and more refined. Just like if you put down a burden, it's so wonderful, I don't have to carry this anymore. It is always a happiness of letting go of something. And so, what happens after the fourth jhana, you're very still. And what happens when things are still? They disappear. So you watch a wall, it doesn't move, and you're not moving, something disappears. And this is what happens with, from the fourth jhana onwards, the mind disappears. You see it going. You're there, and it vanishes. Afterwards, you come out, even this mind disappears. The citta. than Noah. That too is unstable. So that disappears. And that comes, dear Om Mani Krispy Kreme Hum, I've got here. The insight that the first dream winner had was that all things that arise from a cause will also end. But what things arise from a cause? Every one of your five khandhas, things like the body, arises from a cause and it goes away again. And so does all the components of your mind. Your experience, what some people call feeling, that arises from a cause. And if you sit very still, your bodily feelings, they just stop. And the same with your mind. That also arises from a cause. And you need something to be able to watch. In the suttas, for those of you who know the suttas, it comes from Nama Rupa. Nama Rupa is a cause for the mind coming up, for consciousness, sorry, all the consciousnesses. And when Nama Rupa, basically the objects of consciousness vanish, so does the mind. So this is the Anya Kondanya realized that everything which arises from a cause, which was his body, his mind, the whole caboodle, that was also liable to cease. Is it that once you are in jhana and see the body and then the mind disappear, you see that you are conditioned? Exactly. Your own body and mind are anicca and therefore also anatta. Anicca, as I said, doesn't mean rise and fall. That's one interpretation. But the real meaning of anicca is that things vanish. They disappear, they're gone. Ooh. Because Nietzsche, it's interesting. You know, I was telling Ajahn Vamali about this for a long time, and he came, oh yeah, and he was studying some Vinaya. He said, oh yeah, you know, this is actually right, Ajahn Vam. I've been telling you for years, even Ajahn Vamali. So, Nietzsche was a regular. Food which was brought to, this is from the Vinaya, food which was brought to the monastery every Tuesday by a certain person. That was called Nietzsche food. Regular, you could depend upon it. And if it's that regularity is broken, that is called anicca. So it's not just impermanent, sometimes uncertain, irregular, not to be depended upon. Subject to stopping. So that's the same with anatta. When something is subject to stopping, coming and going and vanishing, then that can't be a self. And they call me Om Mani Krispy Kreme Hum. That means homage to the Krispy Kreme donut. If the optimist sees the pastry in the donut and the pessimist sees the hole, what does the arahat see? He or she sees through the hole. Beyond the hole. That's good enough, isn't it? Okay. Requesting your philosophical reflection of a math question, what is the relationship between zero and infinity? To use that philosophy for real life, that if you look at what goes after the four jhanas, we have what's called the arupa states. And many of those, they are states, sometimes they're called infinite consciousness or infinite space. And sometimes infinite space, infinite consciousness, I like unmeasured, unbounded space. Because to understand those things, that many of you, I hope, have got into the present moment awareness, and in the present moment you can experience something weird. And that is that there's no time at all. It's zero time. But then it's infinite. In other words, you just don't measure time and time goes on forever. You have all the time in the world and no time at all when you get in the present moment. Because you're not measuring time anymore. And the relationship between zero and infinity, neither can be measured. Zero, point. Nothing. Someone who practices Tibetan Buddhism once told me that breaking a precept is worse than not taking one, which is why they didn't take the refraining from intoxicants. Oh my goodness, that sounds like an excuse to me. What is your view on this? You take a precept, they're called training precepts. Yes, you will make a mistake, but you learn from mistakes and do better next time. This is like saying, failing a test is really bad, so you don't need to take them. Like, failing at going to school, getting a subject wrong, is so bad that you better not go to school. Of course, we take these precepts because we learn from them. We grow from them. And so, if we're afraid of breaking a precept, and so I better not even keep them in the first place, then of course, you know, we will not grow at all. So we give it a try. And that means that we give it a try, we take the precepts. If we fail, then we learn from it and try again. Following our interview earlier, what do profound moments in life, such as my father's death, where all thoughts, sensations of past and future all seem to disappear, replaced by a moment of pure grief, sadness, have to do with Buddhism or meditation? What do you make of these moments? I think sadness is not in the present moment. Sadness is remembering sort of some of the experiences in the past where you failed to do what you could have done. And or grief is looking at the future when something which you always had was there, is no longer there for you. In the present moment, sadness and grief really do not exist. It's just this moment right now, you can't change it, here it is, you just are with this moment. So sadness and grief, again, are just culturally imposed upon us. And I saw that surprisingly, when I was in Northeast Thailand for 9 years, and in the villages that had not been colonized by Westerners at all. So somehow or other they managed to, over the border in Laos, to the French, down in Malaysia there was the Brits, the English, and in, but over there in Northeast Thailand, they'd actually just managed to keep everyone out. So anyway, but there, they'd never seen Westerners before, and so it was weird. When somebody died, I never saw people cry. I must say that there was once I saw a tear, not that long, of one wife, their husband died quite young. Other than that, and you saw them every day. And just, death was part of life, literally. And culturally, they were at peace with death. So, pure grief and sadness. What's pure about grief and sadness? Is it pure? I think what they meant was there was just sadness, grief. Why? Does the person who's died want you to cry? Does that help anybody? The story of Kisar Gotami. Kisar Gotami, many of you would know that, that she had one child who died, and she hadn't got a husband. I don't know what happened to the husband, but that she was carrying the dead baby around, trying to find a cure for this, because she was in denial that her kid had died. And she heard that there was this really wise, very good meditator called Buddha close by. So she went up to the Buddha and almost begged him, "Look, I know you can do this. Can you bring my little kid back to life? It's all I've got. I'm so sad." And the Buddha used what we call skillful means. He said, "Well, what I want you to do is go to the village and ask to get 3 sesame seeds or mustard seeds." And said, "Don't cost much. I'll probably give them to you, the tiny thing, from separate houses. Oh, I can do that. And she had some hope. But, said the Buddha, they have to come, to have any potency, they have to come from a house where no one has died. And that was the Buddha's skillful means. So she went to the first house, knocked on the door, please, can I just beg him, my kid has died and I really, really need something. I said, what do you want? He said, just a sesame seed or a mustard seed. I said, that all? That's hardly anything. That's all I want, please, just one. Oh, but, has anyone died in this house? I said, oh yeah, grandma died last year. Oh, thank you very much, can't use it. Next house, anyone died in this house? Yeah, unfortunately, somebody sort of, the father died of snake bite. Thank you, can't use it. And when she went about six or seven houses and found that she couldn't get one sesame seed, because in every house, someone had died. Something clicked inside of her. The death of her son, even though tragic it was not the only death. When somebody close to you dies, it's like that death is unique, it's the only one. And it's tragic. If we can only just see that death is normal, that death happens to everyone. And we don't just focus on our loved ones. We focus on all the other people in the world. Even right now, how many people are dying today? How many people are grief-stricken today because their loved one has died today or this morning? We look at that and we realize that if we are so grief-stricken, it's as if that the death of our loved one is the only thing in the world. We focus, obsess, and don't see the big picture. That's what Kisa Gotami did. She understood that death comes to all. And so, she buried her kid, or cremated him, went to the Buddha, became a bhikkhuni, and became one of the great arahat bhikkhunis, Kisa Gotami. What she did, in her Terigata poem, she was meditating, watching a flame, and the wind blew the flame out. And that was it. She realized just flames, just like the body and the mind. They're just cause, they're fuels, their nutriments, and when those fuels get exhausted or something blows the heat away, then the flame just extinguishes. It doesn't go anywhere, it's just stopped. It nibbanas. That was the word for flame going out. Nibbuta, gone out. So, that's why when something like a death happens, don't just think that that's only your father, that your son, your sister. Death happens to everybody. If you see the bigger picture, then there's no more grief. It's the world. It's life. One of Ajahn Chah's greatest similes, very easy to understand, very short. There was a man who had a duck. And he wanted to be a chicken. A man had a duck and he wanted the duck to be a chicken. End of story. This is human life. People die, but you don't want them to die. You have a father, a loved one, and you want them to be an immortal. You're asking from this world something it can never give you. That's a problem. This morning you mentioned about in a certain place in Sri Lanka where the retreatants are being certified as dream entrants, etc. What happens if the retreatant does not want to know the level of sainthood he or she is in, but people surrounding insist on labelling? Should we ask these people to keep quiet or should we just let it pass? You know, sometimes people keep labeling me and labeling you. They said, oh, you have attained the great state of fatness. I just let it pass. You're so lazy and stupid. Sometimes they label you with that, so you just let it pass. Remembering, labeling other people judging you is like pouring Chanel No. 5 or urine over a lotus. Don't let anything stick. You're a lotus and stay like that. Can you cultivate the necessary stillness for nimittas and jhanas amidst the demands of a very busy schedule? Assuming you skillfully and consistently apply yourself in meditation. I think I answered that one yesterday about just service, but just the right amount of service, not too much, not too little, which means that you can grow. What is the truth in what you said that if you sit on the front meditation hall, the power is so strong? People sit in the back and get wind. Sorry. But it is true. Some places have lots of power. And you've tried that. Many of you have tried that, sitting in the front of the hall. And that does have a strong energy. Do white lies break the precepts? White? White? Why do you call it white lies? Already, you're actually saying that it's okay, it's pure, it's not. So lie is a lie is a lie is a lie. So, what if it's to save other people? Lies do break the precepts, but sometimes people do break precepts and they learn from it. It's to see if it's the right thing to do. So, sometimes when we say, oh, it's okay, just a little lie every now and again is okay. Because actually, usually people start compromising when they talk about the fifth precept about alcohol. Well, you know, just a little bit of alcohol. You know, it's not going to sort of make you drunk, just a little bit, but just a little bit. And they keep on saying this again and again and again. So eventually, I give in. Okay, just a little bit of alcohol and a little bit of adultery and a little bit. Of murder, and a little bit. So I can see you get the message. Why is it the little bit only of the alcohol one? Okay. What does a scientist see at the reverse end of the telescope? They see, they're going in. The telescope expands your perception to see the whole universe, the infinity, as we said earlier. If you look at the other end, it's like a microscope, and you see the little eye of the person who's looking through the other end. So instead of seeing outwards, we see inwards. Not where the universe goes to, but where it comes from. And I never actually said that, but the beginning and the end of the universe, the Buddha said, can be found right within this fathom-long body and mind. It's a famous saying of his. So if you want to find the end of the universe, and the beginning too, right in your body and mind. Dear Ajahn, you gave me so much inspiration, now I need to expire. No, I did that one. Inspiration, like the in-breath, has to be followed by the out-breath. Inspiration is the cause for expiration. So you're going to expire soon. Anyway, how should we say that? Thank you so much for throwing jokes. Really grateful. Very good. Okay, the other ones. Okay. The running monks one again. 80 kilometers a day, every day. Crikey. You know that you can get a bus? Now that was actually one of the sayings of the Buddha, that he went to the Ganges River and there was this ascetic who managed, after many, many years of practice and lots of sacrifice, to be able to walk across the Ganges River. Now, for 30 or 40 years, you know, of practice to be able to walk across water. And the Buddha turned around to his monks and said, you know, just for, you know, for about 50 cents, you can get a boat across. So is that the purpose of monastic life? Of meditation? Of the spiritual life? To impress others that you can run 80 kilometers a day? How long for? Soon, your body will wear out. So that's not the purpose. In a trance, yeah, maybe. But why not use the trance for something a bit more useful? Where do you get to anyway? 80 kilometers? Then you've got to run back again. That's why I could never understand why people would go in these races, 200 meters, 400 meters, because you start in one end and you just run around and come back to where you started. Life is a circle. And so, you start off. You start off not being able to speak, and later on, when you die, you're not speaking. When you start off life with nappies, and you finish your life in nappies. You start off with no teeth, and you finish off with no teeth. Many people are bald when they're born, and they're bald when they die. And I often say that as you get older and older and older and older, so many parts of you fall off and decay. So much so that you can't walk properly without a stick. You have to have glasses for your eyes. You have to sort of have little things for your ears because you can't hear properly. And your hands start to shake because, you know, you can't still keep them. And everything just gets worse and worse and worse. Except for one thing. The one thing in a human being which gets stronger with age. This, the mouth. It is true. As you get old, your grandparents, they can't see, they can't hear, but my goodness, they can talk. Same with old monks. Is that the case with Venerable Posada? Very diplomatic answer. So those are the questions. Now, you know, for this retreat, there have been many things which have, may have inspired you. There have been many things that said, oh my goodness, how many times do I have to hear that? There are many things which you didn't understand, which is why you have to keep repeating it. You think you've understood it, but have you? And there is many things which are seeds inside your mind. And sometimes people say, well, Ajahn Brahma, it's the first time I've come on one of these retreats. I'm not even a Buddhist, but you talk about jhanas and deep meditations. What's that got to do with me? If you aim high, in the sense to teach really deep stuff, you may not really understand it now. You may even rebel against it and try and block it out. But there's something in it which you can't forget. And sometimes that you do get close. Close to letting go, to being peace. And as you get closer and closer to letting go, which is almost like testing out the absence of will. What's it like not to will anything? In other words, let things be. Let go of controlling, doing, wanting. Which is letting the will go. What happens? So little by little, this is a great experiment. And you are the experimenter and the subject. And you get some amazing ideas and insights and experiences. All the time we search for happiness. Just like that old monk doesn't lie story. Search for happiness over here, over there, somewhere else. And instead we learn how to let the arrow fly. The arrow has always been a symbol of craving, of wanting. You know, for that some generation of military and farmers, you know, 25 centuries ago. So when you let the arrow fall, you let it fly. And it goes straight down where you have, naturally, it's where it tends to go. Right where you are. And there you find the treasure. So a lot of times, whether, it doesn't matter what religion you are, though if you can let things go, remember this Muslim lady who came to one of our retreats, very devout, observant Muslim, And she came in a hijab. But when she came into the retreat center, she took her hijab off. And she meditated and meditated, did a very good job. And then as she went home, she put her hijab back on. And she said, I can't see anything with this which is wrong about, which is contrary to, you know, being a Muslim. And so that, you know, that she realized that it doesn't really matter what religion you are. What's important is that you can stop and be peaceful and see what's in the center of you. To me, the religions are just the outermost petals of the lotus. What race, what gender, that's to do with your body. Old, sick, that's body stuff. You can go be in right into the center of your lotus. And in the center of your lotus, all the things which divide us tend to vanish. So much so that, I only told this during an interview time to somebody, but if you do get into a jhana, which is possible, and sometimes when the last time, when you think it's totally impossible, when you least expect it, that's usually a good time when it happens. And don't try and beat the system by saying, okay, I'm not going to expect it, I've got another half an hour, I'm not going to expect it, okay, I don't expect it, come on, when's it coming? Okay, I don't expect it, I don't expect it at all, no, I don't expect it. So don't, you have to be sort of really sincere, honest for this to work. And those are the times when these things come, and sometimes it's great to understand what's happening. But what really is spooky is if you do experience a jhana, I think I said it in one of the talks, then you are experiencing exactly the same thing the Buddha experienced. There's no difference in the experience. That is how the Buddha lived. Your body is gone. Time has vanished. The experience is common. When I started thinking about that, afterwards, that really is goosebump stuff. Big time goosebumps. That's how powerful these things are. And if anyone wishes to check me out, that's on the Elephant's Footprint Similes. Which any Sri Lankan here know that was the first talk the Arahat Mahinda gave to King Dewanampiya Tis when he came to Sri Lanka. Similarly, the Elephant's Footprint. So this is actually where you experience a Buddha mind. You know, interestingly, the other thing which really sort of spooked me and just woo, was that the experience of that first jhana, it's just the first jhana, let alone the second, third and fourth, they said was Sambodhi Sukha. It's one of the descriptions the Buddha gave. And Sambodhi means enlightenment. He actually said it was the bliss of enlightenment. I thought, well, hang on. Everybody knows that's not enlightenment. Even Devadatta, the Buddha's cousin, sort of experienced the first jhana, and he was certainly not enlightened. But he said it's a bliss. It's almost like a taste of freedom. An understanding, a first whiff of what this must be like. No wanting, freedom, bliss, stillness. That's actually how powerful these days are. So that's why that sometimes these things happen. And it's, don't ever think that you cannot do it. That's the weird stuff. In fact, in Vietnam, about 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, I don't know what, the United Vietnamese Sangha, apparently, they came together and said, it's just too troublesome to teach jhanas to lay people, so we won't do it. It was banned. Of course, they've changed now, which is wonderful. And even in the Theravada tradition, I remember once going to a Western monastery. I won't say where, but as I was going into the reception area, a monk was coming out and he grabbed me by the shoulder and pulled me out. And then it was like he was sharing sort of some banned novel or some pornographic magazine or something. That's what it's similar to. Of course, monks don't do that, but he looked around, made sure no one was listening. He said, Ajahn Brahm, thank you for teaching jhanas. And then he scurried off. I was shocked about that. What's wrong with jhanas? That's what it's supposed to do. But just you can see, just sometimes the teaching of jhanas to some parts of Buddhism, even monastic, and even I almost gave the game away about the number, did the, but even this nun who came to a monastery once, and she started teaching. So she asked her to give a talk. This was years ago. When was it? Did anyone was there at the monastery when I came and gave a talk? We invited her to give a talk in the Bodhinyana Hall, and she was a bit surprised that we would invite a woman to give a talk to the monks. Whoa! What are you talking about? Come on, you give a talk. She gave a talk on jhanas. And afterwards she said, are you offended? What are you talking about? We teach jhanas here all the time. She was actually quite surprised. But that's actually just why I don't know why jhanas had a bad name. But certainly, they don't anymore. And people do these things and they really see amazing stuff. Why not? So when you know you can, people do. Ooh, it's fascinating, wonderful stuff. So that's what I've been teaching, and that's actually why, you may not get it this time, but the seed has been planted. It's there. But when you have that seed, you have that seed already, but now you have to make sure you don't destroy it. Remember what I said about the only way you can keep the water perfectly still is put it down. And how you put it down, and so it's almost, it's 8 days, 9 days now. He's still yet, come on, it's the last day, come on. That is destroying the seed. Leave it, be patient, give it time. That's the only way to do it. Stop wanting, let go of time, stop measuring. And when you let go, you're just patient. Just by itself, peace is enough. Just to relax. You get so many benefits. Not the big benefits of the jhanas and enlightenment, but you get so many benefits on the way. Peace and happiness and diseases disappearing. And it's amazing the sorts of stuff we've seen about the body healing itself. When you let go, you feel relaxed, peaceful, stress-free. You go back to work or to your husband or to your wife and say, you lucky thing, where have you been? And what sort of drugs did they give you in Jhana Grove? Please bring me back some next time, because they only can act for many people. At that time I was over in a prison in England, and we just installed a Buddha statue there, a Buddha statue in one of the prisons in England. And when we put the Buddha statue in there, we had to install it. We did a ceremony. We did a circumambulation 3 times, like we have the big stupas over there with the Buddha inside. But it's good that I actually didn't tell you this and that until the very end. That actually comes from Borobudur, the Buddha statue there in central Java. It's the same stone. And donated here by a very good friend, Venerable Sri Panyawara, and that he was the one actually who said that book, The Art of Disappearing, was the best book he's ever read on Buddhism. It was a wonderful praise by such a great monk. Just vanishing, disappearing, going. But anyway, so he donated that, and the myth is, the tradition is, if you go up onto the top of one of those stupas, and if you can put your hand inside the hole, and if you can touch the Buddha inside, then you will find true love. So if I see any of you doing that, I'm going to tell your partner. If I see any of you nuns doing that, I'm going to report you to Ayahasapanya. Same with the monks. That was the tradition up there, but that's the total hocus pocus. But anyway, that installed as a big Buddha statue there and had all the people, or myself and all of the Buddhists and stuff who were there, we'd circumambulated it with flowers, incense and candles. And I was just getting so much joy and inspiration, just a Buddha statue in a place which needed it more than any temple, you know, a place where people were really suffering, they were in jail, sometimes were doing some terrible things. They're the ones who needed the presence of a Buddha for healing and for inspiration and peace and seeing the beautiful stuff in life instead of the negative. And of course, there was a couple of prisoners there. They were just waiting. They weren't Buddhists, but because it was offered by Thai people, the Thai people actually got a big feast for everybody. They were just waiting for the ceremony to be over so they could get to the food, basically. So a couple of them, I saw them in the corner of my eye. I was just really blissing out, just focusing on the goodness, the wonderful, the amazing thing which people have been doing. And then I caught them out of a corner of my eye. They pointed at me. So you see that man? He's on the gear. And apparently I didn't know what that meant. I had to ask afterwards. I am a very sensitive, pure monk. Maybe. Well, I'm sensitive, maybe when I was young, but I didn't know what the gear meant. Apparently it was it cocaine or? Anyway, drugs in general. Because they saw that smile and said that. The only time they've seen a smile like that is through drugs. Of course I don't take drugs, except just, you know, the jhanas and the keeping precepts, drugs, kindness, drug, and stillness and forgiveness, drug. That's very addictive, being kind. So the kindness drug. So, when they saw that, they couldn't understand how this could be. And this is what you will find. It's not the jhanas yet. It's not seeing the Dhamma, but it makes you peaceful and happier and happier and happier. And my goodness, that's in itself is worth a lot. Relaxing, overcoming cancers, depressions. That's what sometimes people start with. But they get far, far deeper, much more than they ever expected. Peace, bliss, meaning. Going beyond the thoughts. I don't know how many times that thoughts drive you crazy. Remember pushing the wheelbarrow in Thailand? That story in Open the Door of Your Heart. Pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. Doing it is hard. So, I was wrong. Even monks will have to make mistakes, some more than others. Pushing a wheelbarrow is the easy part. Thinking about it was the difficult part. Because I was complaining, I didn't want to push the wheelbarrow. Why not? I didn't become a monk to do that. To push wheelbarrows all day, just, you know, you stingy old Ajahn Chah, go and hire someone. Instead of making me do it, and all the other young monks, until they saw me complaining. Sort of in English, I thought they couldn't understand. But they, body language, you can see that people are upset and angry. And they said, Brahma Wangsa, pushing a wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. Oh, that was such a wonderful lesson. Worth a year of pushing wheelbarrows. Fortunately, I only did 9. It's a 9-day retreat. Now we should have the next 9-day retreat, just pushing wheelbarrows. But I'd learned so much. It was the complaint of thinking about it. That was a difficult one. That was the problem. As soon as I stopped thinking about it, it was easy. It was fun. Life is like that. You learn just the obstruction of thoughts. Of course, you know, sometimes you think every now and again, but you don't overdo it. Western people, modern life, we overdo the thinking. So anyway, we learn so much on that path. It gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. More and more fun, more and more joy. So when you go home, you say, well, how can I keep up the practice? Ha 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 ha. You won't be able to forget it. You're already brainwashed. When you've had a taste of this, yeah, you can forget it for a while. You get busy in your lives, but after a while, it just comes back to you. When you need it, it's there. What Ajahn Chah would always say, this is food for the heart. Food for the body. Get good healthy food for you, what suits you. Healthy food for the mind. If you don't meditate when you go home, after a few days, you feel yourself, something's missing. Just like when you're hungry, you're weak. No resilience. You get tense and angry too easily. When you meditate, you feel far healthier. That is why, whether you like it or not, another example of you're out of control. Your free will has been subverted by Ajahn Brahm, and now you are totally under the control of wanting to meditate. Isn't that nice? People get fed. Well, Ajahn Brahm. People actually say that sometimes that they're over in Hong Kong and they're meditating, they hear my voice. Ajahn Brahm. Don't take the alcohol. It's not me, it's just you. So anyway, but that is the last little bit of talk and answered as many of those questions as possible. And of course, the winner of the questions was the one who said, what is the being a stream winner? Why be a stream winner? Who wants to win a stream? And take it home with you. And if you want to be a non-returner, you don't want to get reborn again into this world, then you just become a Catholic. And then you just get reborn in heaven. It doesn't work that way, but anyway, it's a neat question, thank you very much. But they've said they wanted a rain check, they will decline the prize of a free haircut. So, well, why not? But you get a free haircut sooner or later when you get old and you die and you get bald. Actually, does everyone get bald? I know guys usually do. I know some baldness is a... Oh, of course they don't know because they have wigs and hair implants and they dye their hair. We don't dye our hair. As we are, that's how you see us. Sadhu. 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 Okay, so now it's a toilet break for about 10 or 15 minutes. And please remember, there's always a queue, especially with the ladies' loo. So please, those who get there first will be relieved first. Very good.